Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the New Media Show. My name is Todd Cochran. Of course, I want to give a shout out to my co-host, Mr. Rob Greenlee. Good morning, Rob. How are you?
Good, Todd. It's great to be back on here with Blab. It sounds like Blab is continuing to change things, and hopefully they're improving things and not just making things more confusing for blabbers out there. What's your thoughts so far?
You know, I noticed the globe is missing, so it doesn't show where all our listeners are from. So I don't know where that went, but they've definitely changed a few things. So it's okay. But the main functionality still hasn't changed a bit. That's the main thing.
Yeah.
I tell you, Rob, I have to mention, I was in my car and I was waiting for my son to finish up, I don't know, something. And I saw that you were live with Scoble. You were taking him to the airport the other day. So I got to catch your guys' live drive to the airport. How did you happen to just, were you at the same event as Scoble and give him a ride or what?
Yeah, I was on a panel at an event here in Seattle talking about kind of local media and kind of the digitization of local products and services and things that, you know, like the whole Uber and Airbnb and how newspapers and radio and audio could transform people's processes for how they find local services and products and things like that. So, yeah, I was on a panel and Robert was a keynote at the same event, and he needed to go to the airport, and I gave him a ride because it was kind of going the same direction that I was going home.
So you got an impromptu interview in the car, so that was kind of funny.
Yeah, well, he just pulls his iPhone out and starts live streaming us on Facebook, and I was like, oh, okay. I'm Thanks, Robert.
Yeah. So I live your life live, so that was cool.
Yeah, it was fun.
Well, I tell you, it's been a couple of weeks here. Of course, last weekend I was, it seems hard to believe it was just last weekend. I was in Chicago for my team's, I guess we should call it winter retreat. We used to call it retreat, but it definitely
frozen was retreat. Is that what it was?
Yeah. And, it's not necessarily a retreat. It's a working, you know, about 72 to 96 hours. And, you know, I think you just did your jaunt to Europe to do yours recently as well, but we had 268 agenda items or 286, one of the two, and we got through everything. And I tell you, I came back stepping a little higher. It's been we reviewed everything we did last year and everything we got planned this year, and man, incredible growth. I just can't believe just in 1 year, I'm really proud of my team, and we're about ready to hire three more people. It's really outstanding. It's crazy.
That's great, Todd. I'm really, really, you know, thrilled to see your company thrive and do well and do so many cool things in the space. I mean, I think you're always pushing the envelope. That's for sure.
I mean, it's interesting too. And looking at where new business is coming from, and the space is diversifying, I guess, for better words.
Yeah.
So very, very pleased. But you're getting ready to pack up, as long with my team's getting ready to pack up. Are you flying out tomorrow or Monday or what?
I'm flying out first thing in the morning to Nashville to go to the Proclaim 16 event. I'm going to spend a whole week down there, and that's with the National Religious Broadcasters Conference. About 5,000 people are going to be there, and a bunch of digital media folks, television, radio, all getting together around Christian media.
That's the focus. Presidential candidates are going to be there too. So yep. I think Ted Cruz and Ben Carson are going to be, I don't know what they're doing. I don't know if they're just
gonna be, they're going to be on stage giving a speech, probably, is what they're going to be doing, or some sort of a conversation with somebody on stage. It's like a forum or something like that is what they're calling it. But I did hear that they're trying to get Trump and they're trying to get the other major candidates to, you know, like Marco Rubio, I think, is going to make it as well.
So hopefully you can stay away from that mayhem.
I'm going to be on the exhibition floor working, I'm sure. So I'm probably going to miss a lot of that stuff.
Yeah. So hopefully the you know, you may end up being empty in the exhibition hall during those events, but who knows, you know? But
yeah, that's true.
So yeah, so it's my team's all ready to go. I think they're because they can drive down. The Columbus office can drive down, so they're driving down on Monday. And I didn't realize it was a 4-day show. So that's a long
actually one. It the actual exhibition starts on Wednesday and it goes through Friday.
Right.
The first 2 days are like the digital media summit and things like that. There's a lot of kind of conference stuff that are going on in the first 2 days, Monday and Tuesday.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So I'm not on any panels or anything like that. I tried to get on the podcasting panel. They actually had one somewhat. It was a start a radio /or podcast panel.
That's so funny.
And all four of the people that were involved in that panel really don't have anything to do with podcasting directly that I saw anyway. I think one of them did. But I think that they're more coming from radio. And so I'm actually going to have some conversations on my Spreaker Live show with a couple of the people that are going to be on that panel. Just, you know, kind of try and get these people involved in the podcasting medium and make a connection there.
That's cool. So, you know, the space is moving and we've had some follow-up press in the recent days. I'm just at this point, and for those of you that aren't familiar with what's going on, it's the continued fallout from the public radio folks' measurement standards guideline piece, and they've really, I'll be frank, they've caused some damage and unnecessarily so.
I would agree. I think it's unfortunate in a way, because I think it's really kind of highlighted an issue that I don't think that the industry was really wanting to face right at this moment. So
it's not necessarily face; it's unwarranted.
Yeah, no, I mean that's certainly part of it, and I think it's I think that it's kind of short or shorted the process with the IAB, and that's how I think it's been damaging. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. We haven't done a show since the IAB had a measurement committee meeting, right? Have I been able to tell you guys what happened?
No, I don't think so. Yeah. Why don't you fill us in on what happened?
Yeah. There? So during the last measurement, you know, and this is the committee that's digging down in the weeds, really not kind of the policy, you know, not necessarily involved in the, I guess for a better word, what there's two parts of the document. There's a tech side and then there's the, you know, the ad units and all that general description. And so we got on the call and immediately IAB spent 30 minutes talking about not IAB, public radio spent 30 minutes talking about their reasoning and their methodology. And Rob, the chat room in the webinar, all I can say was there was not public comments being made, but I was getting, there was lots of crosstalk
<I'll bet. laughs>
happening. And it was almost as if they wanted us to help them fix their document.
Sure.
That's
the biggest reason why it was a mistake for them to put it out to begin with.
And I'll be honest with you, and you know, Angelo, I have to laugh. He said after they got done, he said, "Well, guys, welcome to the Wild Wild West." And so a little shot across the bow.
Yeah,
and well, he asked him, he says, "Do you expect us to, you know, explain to you what's wrong and why your document is not, you know?" So here's what ended up happening. We moved on. We continued with the IAB document agenda. I don't think IAB, excuse me, I don't think public radio got the response that they were expecting from the group. And one, you know, there was a couple of comments made. I had to be careful here. One of the public radio folks made some comments some technical comments that were self-evident that they really didn't understand some things.
Yeah.
And it's not my job to, or our job to tell them what's wrong. So what Angela and I have done, and we, you know, and this is a risk for us. Mm-hmm. We spent some time while I was in Chicago, him and I went through about a 3-page document that, really laid out the, you know, the, I wouldn't say the rule sets, but I will say the methodology that is required to do this right. And it's from a, and I'm not good. We're not going to tell people how to do it, only that you have, this is what you have to do. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it basically lays out step by step by step by step the pieces that should be employed or could be employed. And you know, it's some risk because it's essentially 10 years of, and it's again, it's not the actual formulas, but anyone with this 3-page document could really build their own and wouldn't have to learn the hard lessons that have been learned over the past 10 years and looking at millions and millions and millions and millions of trends and data points and mm-hmm. stuff like that. So, you know, we're going to submit that over to the IAB and let them have it. But I just think that, it's ridiculous that we're having to clean up an issue when there isn't an issue. That's my biggest complaint.
Yeah.
And they're ongoing. I at this point, you know, I've said in a couple of public pieces, I think they've declared war on the space. I know you disagree with that, but let me say that there's no need for what they have said. But at the same time, when you put something out that's got issues and then call the community out because they're jacked up or supposedly jacked up, it just burns my ass. And I think they've done some true damage here.
Yeah. Well, and I think if you look at the press articles that have come out since that article came out, it certainly hasn't helped. It's only highlighted, I think, the divide between the two sides of this, and it's really coming down to radio versus podcasting. I hate to say, but that's kind of what's happening here, and but yet it's not really that either. I mean, I think what we're talking about is the pure podcasting metrics here. There's some that have said, and I've heard this mentioned, that, you know, it's because the radio folks are trying to make it like radio. And I don't know if that's so much the case with the public radio folks. I think it's more that they're just not as advanced with this because they haven't applied science to it. They haven't really dug into it and optimized it, which is not necessarily a bad thing. It's just that it's what it is, you know, and your numbers, Libsyn's numbers and their numbers in their system are going to be different because of it. And that's not solving the problem here.
So I think we're going to come to an ultimate solution, you know, my kind of statement stands at the IAB document. We hope will end up being the gold standard. We hope that it doesn't get watered down. We hope that, you know, it gives, you know, good direction.
Yeah.
You know, and that's all I can really hope for at this point. And, you know, I think my customers and the folks that we work with know that we're there fighting the good fight for them. And that, you know, and for the average guy and for the average podcaster that doesn't do any advertising, they could probably care less about all yeah. this. Yeah, you exactly. know, let's be frank. Yeah, but it sure. It has bigger ramifications down the road for the whole space.
Yeah,
you know, from a viability a standpoint, long term. And
there is a lot at stake. You know, I know that more and more the radio industry is putting their eggs into podcasting's basket, you know, and it's becoming more important to them. It's the same with the public radio folks. They're hoping that the declines in the listenership of the broadcast side and potentially the revenue side can make that transition over to on-demand, podcasting distribution. And there's a lot at stake here. This is not, did the public radio folks, or do you feel comfortable explaining why the public radio folks put that spec document out? Was it because things were moving along too slowly with the IEB, or was it a frustration? Or
no, they just got done with their committee and they put out what they reported. Well, who knows the politics of it? I'm not even going to try to guess.
Okay.
I have my own suspicions on it, but, maybe they were worried. Well, I won't even say this.
Okay.
Well, I think I know maybe they were worried. Maybe they were worried we were going to put too hard of a spec out.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that's fair to say. You know, I mean, you start thinking about the implications of certain specs, right? And there's business ramifications for that. I hate to say on all sides. And I think we've talked about this before. You know, it gets back to higher numbers and lower numbers. What's the more filters you apply, the smaller the numbers. That's not good for your business model.
But I also say this, I'm a little disappointed in some of the industry's leaders' responses.
Yeah.
I see quotes by some companies that they're hedging their bets. They're not willing to be like me. And yeah. And I think that they're trying to be a little more politically correct.
Sure.
So,
well, I can probably raise my hand. I'm doing that as well.
Well, you know, I think we have to really think about what they are, you know, what they're doing here. And if we're not willing to stand up and fight for this space, I'm thinking about the podcasters. My business model, my business model is not going to be affected one way or the other by these folks. The media buyers I continue to talk to today are not raising questions.
Todd, your numbers are going to be better than theirs. I mean, it's just that, I mean, they can implement that standard that they've created all they want, but it's not going to be as accurate as Rob Voice Blueberry numbers or even Lipson numbers.
Or Lipson or PodTrack.
Exactly.
All those folks are doing good things.
Yeah, and it's not... It's not really a threat to you guys, but I think where the problem gets back in is other people in the space will take that public radio spec and say, this is now the standard, right?
Right.
And it's still going to keep that spectrum there that we face today. I mean, it's not solving anything. Hopefully it's a step forward is how I'm looking at it.
Yeah.
But in some ways it's not. In some ways we're in the same position we were before that came out. Right. Maybe worse. Yep. Right.
And I had sent out a couple of emails to some people in the space and I had said, I'm like, what the hell are you doing? And that's why, that was my response. What are you saying? Are you not willing to stand up and tell it the way it is? And people are just, they want to be politically correct. Yeah. So it's okay. I get it, but
Todd, let me ask you this. Did you get the impression, and I'm a little worried about this too, that the public radio folks don't really want to work with the greater podcasting space, or is it they don't feel like they need to, or what's kind of what was the feeling that you got on the call?
I can't say.
Oh, you can't?
No. I didn't develop an opinion on that from that call. You know, they were just kind of laying their stuff out and I don't know what else to say about it except for they're not helping at this point. And their narrative is, I would have hoped that they would have dialed their narrative back a little bit, but to date they haven't. And that in itself to me is very telling that they haven't dialed the narrative back and they continue to say the same thing when fundamentally it's absolutely false and egregiously wrong.
Yeah. But honestly, Todd, I do hear people on the kind of radio side and the public radio side have said for a long time that they think it's the wild, wild west of metrics. You know, I mean, you know, the company I used to work for, and I know that was the attitude down there.
Well, the attitude down there was that whatever number was bigger was best. So let's just be frank.
Well, you know, that is a comment that applies in a lot of places in the space. I'm not sure that it, you know, a lot of people, you know, agree that that's the best approach, but at the end of the day, you know, a bigger number is a bigger number, right?
Yeah.
But it gets back to, well, what's the result of that bigger number? Is it less ROI? Is it smaller CPM rates? There's consequences for inflated numbers.
Yeah. And we've talked about that many times on the show, and we don't need to beat that dead horse. We don't need to. But I don't know. I this is so close and personal to me and to my team. You know, I probably get more pissed off than I should, you know, and I think what we're trying to do is we want to make sure that the space stays sound and the reputation behind it is sound. And we've worked hard to build a solid reputation. And you have Yahoo's coming in and making comments like that, that undercut something that doesn't need to be undercut. And it's grossly unfair to the space and to the people that have built this space. Who built this space? The East Coast bubble with public radio is 1%, 2%, maybe of, and I'm maybe 1% of total number of shows, right?
Yeah.
So the 1% is now out there making commentary that's affecting the other 99%. And the other 99% is largely clueless. They don't get what the impact will be. And, I think podcasters need to start looking and getting a little bit more active and looking at what's being said in the space and publicly talking about it with their audiences, even if it's just kind of a subtopic. Even if you take no advertising, there needs to be some dialogue started, and we need to use the megaphone that we have right here to basically say, listen, you know, this is a sound space. We're digitally measured. And, you know, radio, you get measured by carrying around something on your hip that logs what you're listening to as you're walking through the mall or in your car. Really? Is that? Or you fill out okay, so I've done radio surveys before. So what does radio set me? $2 with a piece of paper in an envelope that says, fill this diary out and send it back to us. Okay, so that's how radio is measured, right? So please, 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 please.
Yeah, I mean, podcast metrics is definitely better than what they have in radio right now, that's for sure. And there's really no really rational excuse why those big brands don't get into podcasting more. I think it's, and I think it's going to happen eventually. So, hello, Eileen.
Good morning. Oh, afternoon. Or anyway, wherever you are.
Yeah, wherever you happen to be. Yes. Yes.
Hi, I've been listening to this conversation about the standardization. And, you know, I typed that comment in. I just wanted you guys to know that, and I'm not representing them or anything like that, but the company that I've worked for over 33 years, we are a standards development company.
Yep.
And, you know, it's a nonprofit, and it is run the way they develop standards, because we're actually the support staff, technical experts across 90 different industries. We have 146 committees, okay? Wow. 90 different industries, and we're one of the biggest. We're world known for our standards. ASTM is the name of the company. And I'm not sure how all this is going down at IAB, but there's always, for consensus standards, there always has to be a fair representation, a balance between users and producers. And through the conversations that I've been hearing you guys talk about, I hear a lot of producers, but I'm not sure what is considered a user. And maybe that's why IAB didn't come to ASTM for the standards, because a lot of times in industries come to us and say, you guys are the experts at developing standards. So, you know, we'll let you guys do it. We use Robert's rules and all that stuff in the meetings. And
I think what you have happening, Eileen, is that there was, for a better word, a perception that there wasn't good data. So the IAB being the digital interactive advertising, IAB, Interactive Advertising Bureau.
Yeah.
It was basically in their keystone, because they've done streaming standards, they've done banner standards, they've done YouTube Play standards, they've done all those things before. And the digital, because it's directly tied to digital advertising, this is really their, you know, their top cup of tea. Now, what happens is, in a typical situation, is let's say the IAB will come out with their guidelines or their standards that'll be signed by the consortium of people that worked on that. So it'll have all those companies' names that contributed and argued and, you know, put their inputs in. Then companies aren't obligated to follow that. But if you do, you can say you do. And then the way they validate that is through companies like MRC. But the MRC validation is $100,000 a year. So, you know, that's not a small undertaking for any company. When you're looking at that type of a bill to basically say, yes, they're following the standards and they're meeting that and then recertifying every year. It's kind of a racket a little bit. And it all costs money. So in the end, what the end goal is that when the media buyer is buying media, they can be assured that they're being protected from fraud. They're being protected from overbilling, all the things that have gone on in the click industry. So in other words, we're talking clicking on banners, that kind of stuff, where they're trying to, you know, only pay for what rightfully has been delivered. So that's what it ends up boiling down to. So, I understand where your company comes in, and there's, you know, I think it's great that there's standards groups. I think each standards group has their expertise, I guess. I don't know. Have you guys worked, or has your company worked in the digital space at all in the past?
Yes, to some degree. And, but I think that my concerns, and maybe they're not valid, and I guess I'm really asking a question, is are the podcasters being represented?
I think
are they considered as a user? And, you know, when I say podcasters, I'm talking about little mom and pop podcasters, yep. The hobby podcasters, whatever label you want to put on folks like me. Yep. Are they being bought in on any of this conversation, or is it just, you know, like you said, it's from the International Advertising.
Well, that's
Bureau.
Sadly,
the Bureau.
Yeah. Sadly, no, the podcasters are not. But one of the reasons why Libsyn and Podtrac and us got involved was, you know, I basically went in to say we need to, number one, obviously we got to protect our interests as a business. But at the same time, anyone that knows me or knows Rob or knows Mark or at Podtrac will know that, you know, we are very cognitive of the podcasting community and the sensitivities there. And so that's why, like on this forum, why I've been talking about what's been happening in that committee. I don't know if anyone else is, but we're there to, number one, protect the podcasters. And no, they don't have a seat at the table. And we suggested that they do that. But it's let's just be on transparency. IAB is a membership group.
You have to be a member to actually participate.
yeah. participate. And
it's a barrier to becoming a member. Like what we've, one of the things that we've done is our membership fee, and this is the part where I come in at because I actually work in membership, is $75. And it has not raised, that fee has not raised, I think, since, I want to say 2008 or 2000, something. Some really long, and it's intentional that it's affordable so that anybody can have a seat at the table.
The IAB's is largely designed towards companies that are selling or doing advertising. So for an individual to come in would be kind of a, I don't know if it would be within their charter, but it could be a podcasting consortium. It could be a group of podcasters. And I thought maybe it's time for another podcasting group that would be able to, and again, because the barrier,
we've done this before.
We have done this. And so the a minimum membership at IAB is $10,000. That's the lowest.
Yeah.
So there's a barrier to
entry. There's a huge barrier.
Huge barrier. And it only goes up from there.
Right. And it's all based on revenue. So your membership fee that you pay is purely based on either gross or net revenue. You have to certify your revenue, and basically they say, here's your membership fee. So the more you make, the more you pay, and it's not an insignificant number. So
okay. All right. Well, that was really my question, and now I understand a little bit better. It's just, you know, the model that we have doesn't fit every industry. Right. And of course, it doesn't fit with what the IAB is trying to do, because they're trying to make it so that the advertisers will know what they're getting, basically. Okay. Yeah. Which doesn't really apply to what I'm talking about, is more to make sure that consumers.
Yep.
Yeah.
As well as, you know,
yeah,
purchasers.
The concept that you're talking about was done with the Association of Downloadable Media. This was back in like 2008, where it was more of a podcaster's membership thing. And I think it was like $50 or $75, if you remember, to actually join. And it had, you know, as a podcaster, you could join the ADM. And then there was a board of directors, and then there were committees that were working on pulling together metric standards and business practices in the podcasting space. And that was progressing along. It kind of sputtered and it eventually died because of infighting amongst all of the parties involved.
Yeah. This is a big challenge. And, you know, that's why I commend you for, and you, both of you guys, for the work. But I know Todd is really, really closely involved in it.
Yeah.
Because it can be frustrating to sit there through these debates. And, you know, I can imagine you, Todd, because we all know you. You're probably rolling your eyes like, this guy don't know what to talk. Will somebody give him the book? Will they bring out the gong or something?
Exactly. And it's because a year, it's multi-year struggle.
We've been at it 16 months.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and that's just the IAB. That's not talking about all the struggles that happened with the ADM.
Right.
And here's the funny thing. We took a large part of the ADM work, that document, and gave it to the IAB. And there is a whole bunch of the stuff that we did in 2008 that is in the IAB document. That's the thing that I'm just sitting back laughing about, because I'm like, we had a standard in 2008. It's a well-known standard. It was public. It was available for anyone to implement. And the big three did. Podtrek, Libsyn, and Blueberry. We all implemented it. And, you know, so that's where the frustration of people that are coming in late to the party and all of a sudden saying, oh, we need some standards.
And you're like, yeah, they're trying to reinvent the wheel.
Absolutely.
This is exactly what we deal with, you know, all the time. People come into the space and then they find out, you know, we already have standards. So another thing that we decided to do also is the certification. So like you were talking about, like once these standards are out there, you know, who's certifying that people are actually, their reporting is accurate. that they're adhering to the standard the way they should. It's going to get deep. It's already.
Oh, it is.
Oh, no. We're still at the beginning stages. That's the scary part about the whole thing.
So here's what it really boils down to is I think I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I'm watching the narrative. And anytime you have a hit piece that comes out on the Wall Street Journal, you look at the narrative and you think, okay, so they said what they said. So what is the true agenda of this article? And you look at the storyline of articles that have come out because these storylines are being pitched by someone. All right. So they're being pitched to a reporter and you look at the progression of the storyline. And I think that there is a major company that's out there that is trying to cause havoc and cause distrust. And then they'll come into the space and say, oh, I'm the golden standard. I'll be the one that will take over and certify and qualify. And I'll be the prince in shining armor over here that will make sure that the world is right and good and screw everyone else. And I truly think that some of this right now is one company. Mm-hmm. And their business model is being threatened currently based upon the change in the world today. So they need to find a new way to assert themselves and remain dominant. And they're going to try to go around the end players and say, I'm the gold standard. So we will see if my theory, Rob knows who I'm talking about. So, and I'm not going to say them by name, but Rob, do you know who I'm thinking about?
Well, I think it could be a couple different.
Well, I think it's one primarily.
Well, I know what you're.
If you guess it, he'll say yes, Rob. Yeah.
So, I mean, Todd, we talked about the standard that was established with the ADM. Now, granted, since then, that's been multi-years ago. Since then, there's been iterations that, you know, and that's one of the reasons why we're at the table with the IAB right now is to come up with a new standard based on modern metrics practices that have been developed since 2008, 2009. So, but Todd, you're right. I mean, there is a certain amount of threat to business models out there, especially people that are coming out of radio. They're used to making a lot of money.
Yes, they are. I want us all to make a lot of money.
No, but
No.
And I think, you know, you're right, Todd. We need to clarify that. Making a lot of money is great and everybody wants to do that.
Yeah.
But it needs to be, you know, honest, right? It needs to be trustworthy. And it needs to be real because that's what the advertisers expect. But it is true that the advertisers have a higher expectation for what this medium can do than they even apply to radio.
Right.
So
man, I wish I could be radio standards.
Yeah.
Please let me be radio standards.
No, don't say that. You're asking for problems.
Well, okay, then my audience all of a sudden is now a million people.
Right? So you can get any advertisers, right? But what I was going to say too, guys, the next iteration, I'm giving you guys an idea now, because this is kind of what we do, is training. This is the next way to make money. Not training people to podcast, but training people to do what you guys do, to run podcast companies, okay? Because the podcast is only going to get bigger and bigger and bigger, you know? And it's going to be somebody else is going to want to do exactly what Raw Voice does or exactly what Libsyn does. And there's going to be space. There's going to be room because... You know, we're just getting new podcasts every day, right?
Yeah, there's about 5,000 to 6,000 new podcasts that are launching every month.
That's what I mean. So eventually, we're once these standards get approved, I say standards in quotes, and then there's a certification place out there somewhere. I don't know if it's going to be one of you guys or there is going to be a new outfit. Then the next thing that's going to be needed is training so that people know how to adhere to the standard, because it's not something you just pick up from listening to a podcast.
No, that's right. That's
right. As hard as I might try.
You know, and I don't think Todd should be the certifying authority. That's not the place for that to happen. And, you know, because who am I to say that Libsyn PodTrack is certified? That's not. But I think what you will find, and here's the challenge too, is because of the certification. Certification literally costs a lot of money. Like I said, at least 100K if you want to go with MRC a year. So you have to also at that point weigh, okay, if I'm spending $100,000 a year to be certified and say I'm certified, I better be doing about, you know, just to make that worth it, I have to be doing $20-30 million in gross advertising a year. And, you know, there's a number that you're going to have to reach in advertising to make that certification even worth it on a business level. So the radio folks are used to paying that bill. But they're also a multi-billion dollar industry. I don't know if the industry can support Libsyn, PodTrack, Raw Voice, AdWiz, Triton, all those companies. You know, I don't know if there's enough advertising in this. You know, if it costs $1 million to be certified, and there's only $100 million coming into the space a year. So it costs us one, you know, I'm not a mathematician when it comes to, I know what my company is going to have to generate in revenue to justify in advertising revenue to justify going through a certification. Now, for the average podcasters, they don't care. As long as we're close. You know, long as we're close, we get in a couple percentage points. I mean, that's where we're at right now anyway, is a couple percentage points. So again, we're better than radio by leaps and bounds, better than TV, better than, you know, we're probably on equal footing with, and I think we're actually in better footing than banners, because there's been so much fraud in banners. We know that people that listen to podcasts do it because it's an on-demand action. It's just not like you're getting people going around clicking on, you know, audio players to start them playing to, you know, jack the numbers.
Right.
But I don't know, Rob.
Yeah. Todd, I wanted to throw out the one question that I think is kind of the elephant in the room of this whole discussion is, once we get through the IEB process, what does our standard look like? What are all the other platform companies going to have to do or support, or what base level, and how does that compare to what Libsyn has or what you have on your platform? I mean, so we're talking about a base minimum standard, right?
Right, right.
But that's not the upper standard. There's still going to be a gap between the base and maybe what you and Libsyn are doing because of the years of learning, right?
I don't know where that happy medium is going to fall yet, Rob. But I do know that there are some companies that are, they're resistant to doing extra dev because this is going to cost. It's going to cost them money to implement.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, so, you know, what's the lower and what's the upper standard, or what's the minimum standard going to cost these companies? I don't know, but I will know that what it costs me. You know, I know that I've got $1 million in dev over 11 years in the stats system. So, but I'm at I would consider myself at our stuff at the upper level. So what does it take to get to the minimum level? 200,000? I don't know. You know, whatever that bill may be, do they have something already they can tweak? We may have to tweak a little bit on our system, you know, so. Barry Stella, we're talking about the measurement of podcast and essentially the controversy that's going on right now, that some folks in the media space don't believe that the measurement is good. But, you know, I'm contrary to that argument that the measurement is good in most cases. Those that are complaining about measurement are largely the ones that don't have it or don't understand it.
One more thing I wanted to add before I pop out, guys. I think that the bottom line is that I think the advertisers need to have a more realistic set of expectations for where they're going to advertise. And, you know, like we were talking earlier, size doesn't matter. Size does matter. And I think they may be too focused on the numbers and wanting to have these big numbers instead of looking at the audience and, you know, these narrow audiences that add up, you know, like I can't help but bring up Cereal, right? And you've got MailChimp advertising on there. But who would think, like, who's thinking that an email marketing service is going to advertise on this podcast? It has absolutely nothing to do with the whole digital media marketing space.
Well, but let's be honest, though. The media buyers don't have a problem. That's the crazy part about this.
Mm-hmm.
The media buyers are happy.
Yeah, I think they've all adjusted to what the realities of the podcast market are today. I think, and they know which players have higher numbers than others, and they're smart. Todd and I, you know, and we talk to these people. They tell us what the ground truth is. So there's no big secret of what's happening here.
A real TLN, if you think that Twit makes $24 million a year, I've got a bridge to sell you.
I'm going to jump out, and that's Carlos. You should. Carlos is really into video and video production, so he may have some stuff that he can learn or add to this conversation. But thanks, guys, so much for having me. And I had to get that off my chest about the whole standardization, because it's like you guys aren't doing it right. But you know, like I said, everybody's model doesn't fit. You know, the consensus process where you have users, the regular, average, everyday man on the street involved in the process, that just doesn't always work. And this is probably one of those situations.
Well, yeah. I hope it works eventually.
Okay, guys.
I want to put this behind us. Yeah.
And thanks for being advocates.
Oh, no worries.
Thank you. Yeah, well, thank you for joining us. Yeah, I wanted to make a quick comment about Twit. The last revenue number that I heard that Leo put out publicly was, I think, around $6 million. And that was about three or four years ago, though.
If he's doing $24 million, that means he's doing probably a quarter of the total space. And I know that's not.
Yeah, I don't think he is either. I mean, my guess, he's probably in that same 6 to 7 million range, probably is my guess.
Yeah, I would, and that would be a reasonable number that I would, you know, you look at his operation and overhead.
Yep.
You know, that's a reasonable number. You know, Rob, I think and that's the other part of this we haven't talked about at all, too. It's, you know, again, that the advertisers are, you know, largely happy at this point. Yeah. We're doing proposals. I think I had two come in last week that were, you know, we're cranking and turn around. You know, a lot of them are not. What we're seeing sometimes is that the media buyers are shopping now. They're shopping heavy. So oftentimes they're ending up on some of these lower CPM services. And then again, once we get some standards in place, then maybe the CPMs will come back. For some of these campaigns, you know, I had a gal the other day that told me it was for something you hear on the radio right now. And we put the proposal together and we sent it down as 25. And she says, I can't do 25. And I'm like, I said, we'll lose some shows if we can't do 25. How about, I said, let's, if I roll it back to 20 net, not, you know, that's 20 to us, not with your fees taken out, because they take 15% off the top. So, you know, that would ultimately be 23. They would have to charge the customer 23. And she said, I can do 7. And I'm like, well, I'm not doing 7. We can't do 7.
Yeah.
Whoever you're getting 7 with, congratulations to them. It goes back to that the podcaster is the radio and the radio station and the talent. So,
well, and also, you know, this whole controversy around metrics also feeds into the fodder with these ad buyers think they can bid you down on CPM because of the uncertainty. It's almost like a risk penalty, right?
Yeah.
That they can justify. And that's the bad part about what's happening here.
So I just refuse to take it. You know, if they come in at 7, I'm just, you know, say thank, you know, no, thank you very much. And we don't do it. We just don't put the deals together. If I took a deal at 7 back to the podcasters, they would, I don't even want to see the email that would come back, you know, so we don't even do it. But it is frustrating on our part too, when we're trying to put deals together and put money in the, and I like to say we work with a common man. So, you know, I'm not mid-roll that's working with 50,000 listeners per episode. We have some shows that do that. But at the same time, I'm mostly working with the, you know, shows that are in that 10K range, 10K, 10 to, you know, let's say 5K to 25K.
Yeah.
You know, that's probably a big meat of the shows. And that's who we like to, you know, they don't make a lot of money, but maybe they make a car payment, you know, or a house payment or something. And I think a lot of podcasters would be thrilled to make their house or apartment payment with their revenue. That's coming. It's, you know, it's, we're doing more wide proposals. So hopefully we'll get do more wide deals.
Well, if you have a question for us or want to come in and give your thoughts, we have an open seat. Come on in and join us. And we'd love to talk to you if you have a question here.
Mr. Michael says something interesting in the chat room. Rob, he says the elephant in the room is greed and structured standards / efforts. dictates any and all attempts at success in this field. That's an interesting comment. What do you want to?
Greed?
Yeah, greed.
Well, greed is behind anything with business, right?
Yeah.
And it's also, well, there's two spectrums to that too, right? One is survival and one is greed.
Yeah.
And you know, people will do extreme things
we've always run our business on, you know, at least the standard for us for stats. And it's a saying that I've been saying for years. And Rob, you've heard me say this many times. I don't care what the number is, as long as I know what the number is. I don't care if a show has 1,000 listeners or has 10,000 or 25,000.
But you care because you want a real number, not.
Right. I want a real number. Yeah. So that's the key. I don't care what the number is, as long as I know what the number is. And from that, we move forward. And from there, we put together fair proposals. We deliver fair advertising campaigns. We get a fair return for our dollar. And hopefully everyone is happy. And the results are deliver a fair result. So, you know, if that's the case, then I can go to bed at night sleeping well, know that I've served the podcaster well. I've served the advertiser well. And that the client of the advertiser has been served well. And I don't. You know, I can go to my maker saying I didn't cheat them, you know.
That's good.
But, you know, I don't think anyone in business is purposely trying to cheat, but they are definitely trying to squeeze the turnip for every, you know, every drop.
Well, the buyers are doing that, and so are the podcasters.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, a big part of the Citrix Go To Meeting, you know, this is a great case study, and I don't think I've ever told this publicly. So when Citrix started advertising in July of 2005, they came in and bought a number of shows. We were seeing tremendous results. We were beating their national average many times over. So each company has a cost. They know what it costs to get a new customer, and they have an acceptable level of spend to get that new customer. We were beating their acceptable cost to get a new customer by many multiples. So when you do that, they essentially just unleash the checkbook, and they did. They unleashed the checkbook on us, and we were doing, I guess I publicly can say, we were doing deals that were $300,000-$400,000 a quarter. Now that's not shabby spending in 2006. You know, that's what we were running volume with them. And 300-500 shows on a buy, mostly small shows. Maybe the biggest show in the group had 25K listeners, something to that effect. So we were having huge success quarter after quarter after quarter after quarter. Same shows on the buys, adding new metrics. I mean, it was a bonanza. I mean, it was fantastic. So about 4 years into the campaign, they changed media buyers. So Citrix assigned this. No, they got a media buyer. They were running the ads direct first. So the media buyer came in, squeezed us a little bit because they had to get some percentage out of the deal. So squeezed us a little bit, caused the CPM levels to go down, and irritated the content creators a little bit. We ran with that model for a couple of years. Results were still great. And then at some point, I don't remember the year, they brought in this new, they brought in another agency. So they're on agency number two. And this guy, when he came to us, he squeezed so hard. I'm like, I can't go to the podcasters with this deal. This doesn't work. You know, you're getting great performance. We're delivering many multiples above your national advertising deals. Why are you squeezing me for more range? And I went back to Citrix, to my contacts. I said, listen, I said, this is going to ruin this campaign. This is going to ruin the performance on this. You squeeze me. Now I'm going to have shows start saying, it's not worth it anymore. So, when it happened was, when did the recession hit? 2008?
Yeah.
2009?
Yeah, 2008.
Time frame. Right in that time frame, they started squeezing harder. Even though we're still delivering huge numbers, and they actually, Citrix GoToMeeting was starting to see competition in this space. So they actually had people nipping at their heels. So we're still delivering huge gains for them. And this guy came in and squeezed so hard on us and forced us to they cut our CPMs by 50%.
Wow.
Overnight. And I go back to the podcast and say, okay, the next quarter, it's this. And I lost 80% of the folks that were on the deal because they
didn't
want to
do it for that.
They didn't want to do it for that. So companies can be their own worst enemies sometimes. And they had something where they were spending huge amounts of money, getting incredible returns. And we're talking like 9 times lower than their net. So example, if it cost, let's use a round figure here. Let's say it was costing them $100 to gain a customer. And that isn't the actual number. And I'm bringing it in at 7. Why would you not continue to spend money and keep that formula, right? So what we're going to see is if these media buyers continue to squeeze, then...
But the market's going to balance on that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if they don't get what they want, the market will help that balance out. And hopefully over time, as we build confidence in the metrics and confidence in this medium, and the actual ROI starts to improve. The CPMs will go up is what the thought is. I think, you and I both have the worry that the opposite's going to happen here with programmatic, where things are going to drop. Now, granted, when do you think we're going to get to a point where we're evaluating this medium based on purely its results, purely its audience engagement factors, its the connection with the audience, targeting, all that kind of stuff like that, because it still feels like we're not quite there yet.
Well, we're doing that.
Well, yeah, we're moving that direction, but this whole thing of context and understanding who that listener is, understanding what they're, when an episode is downloaded, that it actually gets played, the deeper, more complete metrics that I know that the Nielsen folks want to get to, and we should maybe talk about Nielsen's involvement here or not.
Well, let's also look at, you look at what's going on with Apple this week.
Yeah.
They're saying we're not.
With the privacy.
So it's a privacy thing. There is, here's my prediction. Apple will never release play data. It's just not in their DNA at this point. Everything is so sensitive. They will not release play data. If they do, I'll fall out of this chair. I will dance the jig, but I'll fall out of this chair. So
now, Todd, before you move on to the next thing, one thing that I think is really interesting is that I do know that the Nielsen folks have a relationship with Apple, and I don't know how deep that goes into music and television content. But I did talk to the folks with Nielsen back in Washington, D.C. in December. And that's one of the first places that they're going to go knocking calling on is Apple.
We'll see. And if Apple does it with Nielsen, then they should be talking to the rest of us that are doing measurement in the space, because between Libsyn, PodTrack, and us, we've got 97% of it.
So have you asked the folks at Apple about this topic before, Todd, in email or anything like that?
I will not say how that conversation has went.
No, I'm not going to. I'm not asking you for the results of it. I'm just saying, have you actually pinged them about this
before? Yes.
You have. Okay. Yeah.
So, of course.
Well, I'm just.
Yeah. But, you know, Nielsen's going to try to do what they want to do. But the problem with Nielsen is they can't get between. But that's their problem, is they don't have the source data.
Yeah.
And it's space is so spread that, you know, who's got the source data? Well, are they going to make me pay to give them source data, then make me pay to get results for that source data? That's not happening. No, thank you.
I think that they were wanting to track podcasting, but I'm not sure that they really had an understanding of how they were actually going to accomplish that, where the data lived, how it was being accumulated. I think they're planning on putting out an SDK. I don't believe that they've actually released it yet to the podcasting medium. So I think they're trying to figure out how to do it. And the communication that I gave them was that they're going to have to work with the hosting platforms.
Well, they're going to have to start talking to somebody at some point. But the problem is, you got podcasters that are hosting 7 Ways to Sunday. You know, you've got 135, 140,000 active podcasters. And believe me, they're not all on Libsyn. They're not all on SoundCloud. They're not all on Blueberry. They are all over the planet.
Yeah.
And
a lot of them are doing it off their own servers.
Right.
That are co-located servers like GoDaddy or Rackspace.
Right. So it's the full spectrum. So we'll see. We'll see what... Nielsen hasn't reached out to us. I'll just say that much.
It's a tough market to try and corral. I mean, it's not going to, I told them this, and I think that they realize it. I'm talking about Nielsen here, that they're not going to capture 100% of this market, which is what they've done in the past, right?
Right.
They've done it with TV and radio, is they've been able to get their hooks into every radio station in the country, or at least a sample, right, that was big enough that they could project numbers. And I think that may be the only thing that they can accomplish here, is just get a percentage of the numbers, and hopefully they'll be statistically significant.
But that doesn't do, again, so let's go back and look at the dynamic here.
Yeah.
They dealt with radio stations.
Yeah.
I'm the radio station.
Podcaster is a radio station.
I'm the radio station.
Yeah.
And I'm the talent. And so radio stations paid Nielsen for that. So Nielsen's going to come to me, the podcasters, we're going to give you certified data, but you're going to have to pay a subscription every year to get access to your certified data. Podcasters are going to that's not going to work.
Yeah. Well, and also give you access to get my data, right?
Here's the next thing. Okay. So let's say Nielsen does come talk to Todd at Raw Voice Blueberry, or he talks to Rob at PodTrack. Rob and Todd are going to have to ask our content creators permission to give Nielsen that data. We're going to have to ask our content creators. I can't just wholesale give my content. Can you imagine if I turned over ESPN's data to Nielsen? I'd be in a lawsuit. I would be.
Yeah. You could do that.
Nope. So we're going to have to get people to opt in and understand the ramifications of doing so. So it's when you're the owner of the radio station, sure, let's do this. I want to know what my shows are doing. You know, we want to see what they're doing compared to KPFM next door, or whatever the station is. Yeah,
but Todd, it's not a technical impossibility. Each podcaster, if each of the platforms enable an API connection with Nielsen, and then they opted into sending that data to Nielsen, it can be accomplished. Is that going to happen, or are all the platforms going to do the development work that it takes to be able to share that data?
And not only that, pay to have the data analyzed and pay to get the data back.
Yeah.
we're living in a new world now. So let's be frank.
Well, I think what, you know, for what Nielsen could potentially do here is that a certain part of that data would have to be probably free.
That's not their business model.
I know, but that would have to be kind of a quick pro quo here.
Yeah.
To get access to this stuff is to have a, you know, a more transparent kind of all up view of the industry. But if you wanted to do deep dives into specific thing, that's probably where their business model comes into play.
I just hope the public radio folks dial back the narrative a little bit. That's all I really care about at this point. And we're going to let the process work with IEB, and we're going to come up with the gold standard document that I'm willing to put my name on. And
did you get a sense on the call that that the public radio folks were dialing it back a little bit?
Well, they haven't taken out the Wild Wild West statement out of their document. So, you know, like we said, we welcomed them to the Wild Wild West.
Yeah.
You know, tongue in cheek. So, yeah. You know, and it's you know, again, it's not affecting my business.
I mean, that's the bigger question here, Todd. I guess, you know, it's kind of like throwing gasoline on the fire, right?
Right. Unneedingly. Is that even a word? Yeah.
Unnecessarily, I guess.
Yeah,
is the word I would use. because I mean, let's say what it is. I mean, you have invested in this. You've created this standard.
I didn't create it.
It's not a standard. It's more of just, you know, you've built on the technology and made it.
We built upon a standard that the ADM agreed on.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is the underlying foundation. And it's also the foundation that several other companies are at too.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, there's more than one way to skin a cat, let's be honest, but it's true digital data. There's, you know, the log files only give you so much. Let's be frank, you know, because we don't have that data back from Apple. We don't have that play data, but you know, again, we've been able to learn how to work around that. Thank goodness they control, well, I shouldn't say this. Because they control 80% of the space, by trending data, I can tell what a show is doing, you know, month to month, where the listener count is staying because of the iTunes is, and hopefully they never take this out. And please, and if anyone's from Apple is listening, don't ever take out that function where you stop downloading episodes there between 3 and 5 times that you haven't listened. Don't ever take that out, because if you do, then that really would throw the training skew off completely.
Yeah. Yeah. So have you played around with the new podcast connect system that Apple has now?
Yeah, we should talk about that. Yeah, I have. And here's the challenge. I've been in this space so long. I've had a couple of Apple accounts.
Yeah.
And some of the shows that I submitted before are on Apple accounts I no longer have. So I have them tied as like backup emails. So I'm trying to get access to some of my older Apple accounts so I can go in and look at some of the stuff that's my primary show listings. So I should get that sorted out today. But so for those of you that don't know, and there's
the actual address to it?
Yeah.
I thought it was like Podcast Connect.
Yeah.
.com or something.
You know who owns Podcast Connect Incorporated?
I can't remember.
Me.
Oh, you?
That's my wife's and I's company.
Oh, you know what? I think I remember that now.
Actually, podcastconnect.com goes to a website for my wife and I. That's what I do business for Geek News Central under it. And that's kind of funny. But anyway, they were calling it podcastconnects.com.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's okay. It just made me laugh. But you log in with your Apple ID. And if anyone wants to look at powerpresspodcast.com, we've got the links to the new interface. But you log in with your Apple ID. You can see your shows that you've submitted, stuff that's dead. You can update your RSS feed. You can refresh your listing. And that's exciting because they took the refresh ability away in a long time ago. So now you can refresh your listing. So it's, yeah, it's real nice.
It does kind of make me wonder where Apple's going with this, right?
Okay. So what do you think?
You know, they see what Google's doing.
Well, maybe.
And, you know, there's certain staff members over there have had certain interests. I just wonder if we're at the beginning stages of a big change over there.
Well, it's the first time you've been able to go in and update your RSS feed on your own.
This is huge. That is a big change. Now, granted, podcast networks and larger groups of podcasters have been able to get in and utilize the site manager tools in there for many years now.
But the site manager tools that I have access to for like tech podcasts are really kind of rudimentary.
Well, they're built really to manage your like network page.
Yeah. In there.
That's mostly, well, and also it's a great tool if you need to add podcasts to your network in there. But one of the big limitations in there though, that I found is not so great. And I was hoping that they would have fixed it, was to be able to have a show in a network, right, in your site manager, but also have that same show available outside of that particular site manager. So it can be in two places. A show can't be in two places in iTunes.
That's right.
Currently today.
That's right.
And that's a big limitation that has been an issue for my work in there for a long time. Cause there are shows that have their own network pages or have their own pages in there that then move to be a part of a network. And they want to be in both places, but they can't.
So what I have to do is I have to send email to the group when I need a show pulled out of
this network and put into that network
or put into the regular iTunes stack. Yeah.
And I know that they've been pointing people more to their support email system if you don't have direct contact with the technical team. But if you have great contact with the technical team, you can just get it done really fast. But if you, anyway, that's a little inside on working with Apple. Now, Apple does have a pretty strict standard on graphics and features. So if you have an interest in getting your podcast featured in like the flow section, which is the top level and as an icon graphic in the feature pages, they have a pretty tight spec on what you have to submit to them. One big tip that I would give you with your artwork is that it definitely helps to have a 3,000 by 3,000 graphic.
That's, and actually now that's the new
standard.
That's the new standard.
Yeah. And then the other thing is that you don't want to have any kind of hashtags or Twitter addresses or website addresses in your cover art. They'll pretty much ignore your podcast in any kind of feature situation because that conflicts with their kind of presentation standards that they have. So you need to strip all that stuff out of your artwork. I mean, a lot of shows will put their website address in the show art and your Twitter handle or whatever. You got to pull that stuff out of there.
They also have increased the standards now of the explicit tags. And I'm just...
You have to just opt in to either clean or explicit.
Yeah, that you can't say no. You have to say clean or explicit. You can still have a clean show, but have an explicit episode. But be forewarned, if you do have an explicit episode and you have a clean show, you risk likely being flagged as an explicit show overall.
Reclassified, yes.
Right. And you may be removed from some countries' direct or some countries' listings.
Actually, many directories or right. Many countries. Actually, it's a lot more than you would think.
Yeah. So,
Go ahead. Oh, I was just gonna say. You know what? It just slipped my mind what I was gonna say. But So there. I know what it was. They did make it a requirement that you have to have categories, iTunes categories selected. Else your feed will bounce back in the submission tool.
I think that's always been the case, but I think you have to pick a subcategory now.
Okay.
I don't know if you can pick a top level. Maybe you can't pick a top level. But yeah, they're tightening things up a little bit. And I actually think that the issue with the, we've asked a couple of times on this whole explicit issue and have not necessarily got back quite the answer, the full answer.
Well, they haven't actually made the specific tag changes in their reference documents.
I think they just updated them.
Did they just update it? Yeah, because I did ask them about that. I said, so when are you guys going to put out an official update to your specs docs online for our developers? Our developers are like, well, I went and looked at it. I mean, I told them that it had to be either explicit or not, right? In a very dedicated way. And they're like, well, the spec documents doesn't say that. And I go, well, it's coming.
Yes. So we're going to release a new version of PowerPress. And actually, it was supposed to go out yesterday, but Angela's doing some tweaks and we're taking out. You now are going to be forced to say clean or explicit. You won't have the no option of not saying which you are.
Yeah.
So, and then a few other small tweaks. So yeah, they're making movement over there. Hey, there's another thing I want to talk about, Rob, that you and I might be a little bit of a disagreement on is I've got real issue with the companies that are creating multiple feeds for multiple services.
Okay.
Now,
I understand your concern. Definitely.
It came to my attention that one podcast provider was providing a feed for Spotify, for TuneIn, for SoundCloud, and for iTunes. So
what company was this?
Well, I'll just leave the company's name out of the situation here, but I will just say that I don't know if some podcasters that use that service even know they've got five feeds.
Huh. I didn't know that there was one service provider that was creating separate feeds for all those.
Oh, come on, Rob. You know,
I don't, actually. Seriously. I know of a popular platform that's doing it for a couple of them, but I didn't know that it was doing it for all of them. So that must be something new.
Okay, well, I'll let podcasters come back and confirm or deny this, but this is what I'm being told.
Okay.
I know that they're creating unique feeds for Google Plus and they're creating unique feeds for Spotify for sure.
Oh, okay. Okay. I have a feeling I know who you're talking about. Okay. Yeah.
So, you know, our argument is that there is no reason for you. Okay. For 99% of podcasters, or maybe 97%. For 97% of podcasters, there is no reason for you to have a unique feed for every service.
Agreed.
Okay. There are exceptions to that where you may want to have extra feeds, but I don't think you should have extra feeds and not know about having extra feeds.
Well, if you don't know about them, it doesn't matter, right?
Okay. So when you get ready to leave that service and all of a sudden you think you're having your main podcast feed redirected and...
I see what you're saying. Do you know if the tool set that this provider is providing allows you to update all those in one fell swoop?
I don't know. They're being very quiet about it now that they figured out we figured out about it.
Because it doesn't seem like it needs to be a problem if it's managed properly, right?
Or if the podcaster knows that they are what they're getting.
That's part of the same thing. There may be some advantages in the long run for this. And I came across this a little bit with my experience recently over the last couple of days with iTunes, is that they, just like I was mentioning earlier, that there's some requirements around certain type of art, right? That you can't have website addresses or you can't have Twitter stuff in your cover art for your podcasts. Well, I would like to give iTunes a specific feed that would have that artwork in it, right? But I'd like to maybe give Stitcher artwork that has the Twitter handle in it, right? How do I do that today? I have no way of doing that.
If you're using PowerPress, you can.
Well, that's okay. Using PowerPress.
If you want to. If you want. And I think some of the other plugins will support it too. Okay. But it's not something that we've been going around promoting as something you should do.
Sure.
because it's a, you know, it's, you know, it's all of a sudden becomes a management nightmare for most people.
That's true. That's true. And then the other potential advantage would be, and this is kind of looking into the future, and over and above what kind of difference in presentation of the podcast that you could have at various platforms, and I know Dave Jackson has mentioned this as well, that it would be nice to be able to customize the copy or the art or whatever to different platforms. And then the other part of it is the advertising part. I believe, and we may be seeing the beginnings of this, where Google Play, we all know Google is an advertising platform. That's their whole revenue model. Maybe getting into podcast advertising. And you may want to send them a version of your show that's suitable to their spec for advertising. You may, but you're exactly right. It's a small subset of podcasters that may want to do that. And then there's other platforms like Spotify you may want to do that for as well, that maybe there's for you to generate revenue, kind of like a YouTube model, right? So you upload it, that platform provides the advertising support for that show. You get a check, but yet that doesn't detract from your ability to dynamically insert to other platforms, right? Or to add advertising to other distribution platforms that maybe you directly sell for. So there could be some advantages to this in the long run. I don't know. What's your thoughts on all that, Todd?
You know, I in situations where the podcaster wants it,
yeah,
then that's fine.
But don't just do it, you know, without their opt-in is what you're
really. And I'm not saying that that's the case. I don't have access to their system. I have no clue. So
yeah.
I just think that we need to make sure that podcasters fully understand that the ramifications of having multiple feeds, feeding multiple services, and then when you go to leave, the implications of this is where we discovered it. Talking with the Spotify folks, we moved over a big client and a very big name show, and we were moving their, you know, reassigning their RSS feeds, and we found out that they had some weird, they didn't even know they had the feed, and so that's where the challenge came in. So okay. that was cute. So we've got what do we call those spammers in Blab?
Yeah, that's a Blab spammer. Yeah. Hey, it takes all kinds in this world, right?
That's right. So guess what we do? Oh, that's interesting. All right. Anyway, so. We will, we definitely support folks that want to do it. But at the same time, my biggest issue is I had a new customer that was like, what do you mean? I have a different feed over here. And, they didn't even know the feed existed, to be honest with you. So.
Yeah, I think it needs to be, the podcaster needs to be made aware of that there's a unique opportunity there too. I would think that if they're generating a separate feed, that there would be a way to separately manage that feed too. Right.
I would assume that's the case, but I think maybe they didn't connect the dots. Who knows?
Yeah. I don't know for sure either, but that's what I would hope, would be the case.
Right.
Cause that's the only advantage of doing it is to be able to customize it.
Rob, we're at 90 minutes. Can you believe it?
Yeah. It's the way it happens on the new media show. We talk until the clock ticks 90 minutes, and then we're out of here.
So, you're off to Tennessee,
Nashville.
Yeah.
Nashville. Yeah.
And I guess there's something to do. You know, Angela was telling me that this KFC has introduced this new. Something hot and spicy chicken or something. I haven't ate at KFC in 5 years, but
I haven't. It's been a long time for me too.
So he said that new menu item originated from Nashville, and they have some sort of restaurant down there that serves this certain spicy hot chicken. And we're going to, he's going to sample it and let me know how it works when he's down there. But I think that you guys, it's going to be like a mini reunion. I was looking at the positions where you guys are in a hall, where we are in a hall, and where Libsyn's in a hall. I think if you guys bring like softballs, you probably can lob them.
And
hit each other. So
that's actually a good idea. We'll have to throw little rubber balls at each other. That's right. So who's going to be there from your team?
It'll be Angelo and McKenzie will be there.
Oh, Angelo and McKenzie. Okay.
Yeah. So.
All right. Cool. I don't know I'm assuming Rob's going to be there because that's actually a pretty.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, pretty short trip for him.
Yeah, I think Rob's going to be there.
Hey, Yo Geek, are you going to be in Nashville? Yeah, I tried to get her to come on here.
So, yeah, she's mobile right now. So, for Joe Taylor, hey, make sure you stop by and see us at NRB. And the Moody Radio folks are going to be there. We're going to be talking with them. They, of course, they're one of our enterprise stats customers. So, I'll be chatting with their team while we're there. And they have a big presence. Moody does has a big presence at NRB. I think they have a pavilion or something.
Todd, did you see that I had the president and CEO of the NRB on my Spreaker Live show last week?
Oh, really?
Well, that's cool. Yeah, I had a chance to talk with him. If you go to SprickerLiveShow.com, you can actually listen to my conversation with him about podcasting.
What's his take on the podcasting space?
He's excited about it. He thinks that it's a perfect fit for, you know, Christian broadcasters, radio stations, pastors, you know, individual churches. He thinks it's great building local connections and national connections. I mean, obviously the big podcasters in the religious space, you know, like Joel Osteen and Joyce Meyer and those folks are doing crazy download numbers. Those guys have huge shows.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of success in the, you know, it's the number one genre, not necessarily in downloads, but it's the number one genre in the number of shows that exist in the podcasting space today.
Yeah, we have a large contingent of, because what we're finding is a lot of churches are on WordPress. Mm-hmm. And of course, a lot of their, you know, they'll have volunteers that are taking care of their infrastructure. Yep. Oftentimes, you know, maybe the guy that's running the WordPress site is, you know, he's one of those volunteers. So we look forward to talking to all those folks down there at Proclaim.
Yeah. And in some ways it's fairly new, for them down there because, you know, it's kind of like broadcast radio. I mean, a lot of the folks that go to the NRB event are doing radio. There are a few other companies there that are doing streaming and things like that.
Right.
You know, like online radio, there's a few other companies. I think Stream Guys are going to be there, which do a combination of streaming and podcasting.
Yeah.
So there's going to be some competition down there for us. It's not a slam dunk that the three companies, Spreaker, Libsyn, and Raw Voice, are going to dominate the podcast stuff. There's a few other players down there too.
Yeah, the Stream Guys, I've had interesting discussions with them of late. And they're doing good things in this space.
Yeah, I agree. But they don't get talked about much. I mean, it'd be great to have those guys actually on the show at some point. They've been involved in the space for a long time, actually.
Yeah. Well, they, you know, they were streaming. So that's that preceded podcasting for sure.
Yep.
Okay. We're long. Are you going to be back next week or are you going to be available?
Saturday. I'm actually going to be probably flying at the same time that we'd be doing the show next Saturday.
All right. So what I'll try to do is, maybe I'll try to schedule something with some folks who do a show without you, Rob, see if we can get it out. But if anyone has topics you want us to carry, we've been focused over the last 2 or 3 weeks about this public radio stuff. I'd like to kind of move on from that at this point and get into
more other topics.
Other topics. So if you've got folks that you think we should have on, I'm sure we're going to have a lot to talk about when you get back about the Proclaim event and give us a pass down. And I'm excited to see what happens there. And lots of stuff. NAB is fast approaching too. So lots of going on in the space. So you can reach myself at todd@newmediashow.com or via Twitter at Geek News. Of course, any social media spaces. Rob?
Yeah, I can be reached if you just want to send an email to rob@spreaker.com, and that's spreaker.com. And then on Twitter, at Rob Greenlee, that's two E's, would be great. And I do have a blog that I posted some comments and some audio on this whole podcast metrics thing at robgreenlee.com. So I actually took some audio from the She podcast and kind of overlaid it with my thoughts, because the She podcast spent, Elsie and Jessica spent about, half an hour talking about this podcast metrics topic, and I gave them some feedback.
So, of course, the show's found at newmediashow.com. Subscribe to the show via iTunes. That way, when you're not on Blab, you can catch it. I run with a small team of writers, Podcaster News at podcasternews.com, and of course, all my stuff at Raw Voice. Way too many irons in the fire here, but
you and I both, yes. Yeah.
So everyone, thanks for being here, and we'll see you next time on the New Media Show. Everyone, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.